Crawford, Mr. Blues himself, with Mr. Blues. That's the name of that song. He's one of my favorites. He died in 2009 at the age of 74. He was the musical director for Ray Charles before he went solo. And this is from the title track. This is the title track from his sixth album, which was released in 1967. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and you know what we're going to be talking about. That poor performance that we saw all the way around. Nobody gets away scot-free from criticism on this the occasion of the State of the Union Address. Given what we talked about, you know, you pay attention to the environment of a thing because it tells you a lot about the thing itself. And I think we did a good job of anticipating what the State of the Union Address would tackle, and we weren't off the mark at all. We didn't discuss the so-called response, which was so disappointing. But what we want to talk about today is your point of view as to what we learned from the State of the Union Address, Donald Trump's last State of the Union Address before the presidential election in 2020. 888-874-4888. We could make some quick work of this. What were your observations? What were your observations about it? Again, always important to pay attention to the environment in which a thing is occurring. It gives you context. It tells you more, a lot more sometimes, about what is to be discussed or what is being discussed. And if you were paying attention, there was a lot there to tell us where this was all going. 888-874-4888. Ma'at, you are going to start us off. What was your impression, or what did you glean from the State of the Union Address?
Yes, and I woke up just in time to catch it. And, of course, I knew it was going to be ridiculous and outrageous in many respects. And in particular, his conflating, I tell you, that man is such a mess. His conflating, how did he put it? He said, if you want peace and legislation, he said that stay away from war and investigation. And he thought he was so smart with some sort of a rhyme, but it literally made no sense, you know, as to, and it was actually a threat, okay? Oh. Yeah, yeah. And just he went on. I knew he was going to use the whole thing about the southern border and criminals coming in and drugs coming in. And, you know, he wants to set up a class war, telling working class people that you're in danger from basically families. And certain aspects of the truth, of course, is not going to come out. Like, it's a 50-year low in terms of people coming into the southern border there, and his whole thing around El Paso, all of those statistics, and being the most dangerous city until the wall was put up, that was just all made out of whole cloth. Because did you see the El Paso Sheriff Richard Wiles? He came out with a statement, and he said, oh, it's really sad that the President of the United States should tell such falsehood. And, excuse me.
But what, rather than you gave us a decent enough overview. What, in the big picture of things, struck you the most?
With him or with the Democratic response via Stacey Abrams?
No, we're going to get to Stacey in a minute. I'm talking about your president.
Yeah, ask the question again, Utrice.
What, in the big scheme of things, would you say would be the most significant things that you took away from yesterday, from last night?
Mm-hmm. The fact that he ignored all the pain that he had caused during the shutdown. And, you know, he could have, if he had clever speech writers, they would have put in, oh, you know, I felt your pain, and he would have said something about that episode. Of course, it was just skated over. Nothing was said, actually.
Nothing was said. Nothing was even said at the very beginning to acknowledge, because this is just normal. Sitting directly behind you is the Speaker of the House.
Yes, yes. In fact,
at least say, hey, how you doing?
I didn't catch it until I saw a clip later, because I had to rewind in order to see the start of his talk. But she actually I saw a clip where she put her hand out, and he just looked so perplexed. And then he seemed to have, in other words, the speaker actually introduces the president, and he just, out of ignorance or whatever, he just totally missed the beats on that.
Oh, that was too sad, but that was so Trump. Thanks a lot for getting us started today. 888-874-4888. Now, there's a lot that happened. And it had very little to do with his actual speech. Very little to do with it. Other things were happening that just confounded me and made me so angry. I didn't even want to follow through and listen to the State of the Union address. Number one, they've made this thing into a kind of Hollywood type event. You have the women dressed in white, and then you have people who I call them props, the people props who are going to be called upon or pointed to you know, just magnify a point. Look, the State of the Union address, and people should get back to that, meaning specifically the president, whoever it might be, and the media. You're making an address about the State of the Union. Well, get to it. But of course, we know this being the last speech before the next presidential election, he is basically, you know, he's campaigning. And there's no way, I imagine, to guide the president directly to the point and purpose of a State of the Union address. He's talking about all the great things that he has done, loaded, as the media pointed out, loaded with factual errors. But it was a campaign rally, and not a good one at that. It was not a good campaign rally. It took 90 minutes of listening to drivel and watching the show, when we should, if he's going to take the 90 minutes, he should be telling us something that we ought to know as a nation. That didn't happen. And from the start, I was upset because I looked and looked and looked. You know, I panned the landscape. And it was a very white affair. Very white. Including the media. You would think a situation like that, a State of the Union address, you find at least one black person, one Latino somewhere who knows a thing or two and who has something to contribute to the discussion. Nope. Nope. It didn't happen that way. It was very white. And I am hoping and praying that in the next time this happens, television sets and whatever it is that people are using now to gain access to these kinds of things, shut down. All of them, just shut them down. The media told us yesterday or last night, it is a white world. All of the experts are white, at least on the station I saw, which was ABC. And that's what they do every time there is something of great importance. They lock out black correspondents and reporters. They should have nothing to say, and they did that last night. A very white world. So they were actually a mirror image of the racist attitude of the person they supposedly were covering, and they didn't get it. The newsrooms of America still continue to do a great disservice to all of America by continuing to perpetuate this idea that when a thing is important, only white people should have a say in it. When we're talking about national events or something considered a, quote, plum assignment, you will not see a black face or a Latino face or an Asian face. They're in charge. Molly, what are you thinking about what happened last night?
Yeah, well, after talking to you yesterday, it made me look at it a little bit indifferently because I was prepared to see something rather than just seeing. I wouldn't have watched it except from after people talked about it on the your show yesterday, about what was going to happen. And the first thing that I saw was I felt horrible because I saw that the audience had to stand up like hundreds of times, and it seemed like, you know, it was designed that way. They weren't able to not stand because it would have been absurd if they didn't stand for certain things. And they had to stand up and they had to clap, and it was just horrifying to me. I was embarrassed for our country. It was just, the whole thing was fake. It was like you said, it was like a campaign thing, all that, just without the falling balloons and the music. And yeah. Except it was horrible with that thing about people being forced to stand up. And I also felt like when he was lying about, like, oh, and we did this and all these things that I've done and all this stuff. Well, I knew nobody was calling him on it. And so to me, it looked like when you watch the movie of 1984 and Big Brother comes on the screen and you see his big face. And he also tells like a million lies. It looked just like that. And, you know, like other presidents, whether I agree with them or I don't agree with them, it used to be years back that they would present something seriously, and you would either like what they said or you wouldn't, and maybe they'd kind of be weaselly so that they wouldn't offend people. But no issue. The only issue I saw that was mentioned that was important was he said about that he would support pre-existing conditions. Of course, I don't believe that because I think they're going to fudge that in the end. But he didn't address any issue that I think is important today.
Did it come across as a State of the Union address.
No, like you said, it was like a campaign rally.
And, you know, I think this is not whether you like Trump or don't like Trump. Go with what the said purpose is. The said purpose is you're tuning in to watch the President of the United States report to the people about the State of the Union. And he, early on in this speech, pronounced the State of the Union to be strong. Well, gee. Really? Okay. So let's even go with that. Let's give him the State of the Union is strong. But then he starts reciting a bunch of things that are not indicative of a strong union. So what is the point? It was all fake.
I think he wanted to show that he had support. And if you really don't think about things and you don't have time to keep up with the news, then it looks like he has supporters from women. It looks like he has supporters all over the place because everybody is standing up and clapping. Hardly anybody's had a frown.
Well, this was quite a performance. And, of course,
it was.
You know, he has speech writers and he's got all the bells and whistles that should have made him sound very authoritative and intelligent.
And well, he just presented a million examples of those people. I mean, why did he talk about World War II veterans or the people who had survived the Holocaust? I mean, why was that even a thing in 2019?
Answer that very question. That's a very important question. Take a stab at it, answering it. Why did he have people from World War II and Holocaust survivors?
Because he's going for each segment of the population. He wants people who identify with being in the war at that time, who believe that war is a way to deal with things. And he's just saying, look, identify with this group. Oh, and identify with that group. And he's trying to just, like, sum up all his supporters. He's trying to count them all and make people think, oh, if you identify with this particular person who's standing up, then I'm a good guy. Look, this person is standing up for me.
Okay, but let me ask you straight ahead. Did either of these groups that he pointed to, do they have anything to do with the State of the Union address?
It had nothing to do with anything. It was
absolutely nothing. But he was communicating, and you're correct, he was communicating to his base. He values veterans. He values war, because war is what has made America strong. And he's pandering to constituencies. And this is what was
so annoying to
me. We're trying to listen to what you say is a state of the union, meaning now. You have all these show and tell things going on. And
yes.
Here's Fred, and here's Bob, and here is a Holocaust survivor. And what does that have to do with the State of the Union? Nothing, except that he is campaigning. That was a rally. Thanks a lot, Mally, for your call today. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved, and my beloved family, PRN. Listen, Utrice, I just called to thank you so much for that program you did on John Henry Clark. I mean, it was a superb program. Everybody in my contact got that program, which we should always do, is send your program to everybody in our contact. That's my concern. I just want to thank you so much for it, baby. All right?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air. How did you spend the night listening to the president at his State of the Union address?
Hi, Utrice. I wanted to say greetings to you and the PRN and Lead Story listeners.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I was able to stomach about 15 minutes.
Oh,
of it.
My God. Does not indicate some good things that are about to be heard.
Well, you know, I think the previous female caller kind of got on the money. Yeah, Mally. And you know what? It's a circus. I mean, it is just like, you don't even have to go to Ringling Brothers anymore. Just tune into what's going on in Capitol Hill in the White House. And if Donald Trump is there, you'll get the circus. It was a campaign rally, if you want to look at it that deeply, but, you know, that's all it was. What really interests me was when he was talking about the unemployment rate going down for African-American, Hispanics, and Asians. And then right after that, he talks about he got 5 million people off of food stamps and welfare. Oh. And the first thing I thought about was, oh, you kicked out 5 million people off of welfare. So I was like, oh, God. After that, I couldn't stomach no more. But like I said, about 15 minutes of it, and I was done. But, you know, what you had said earlier about getting black media to comment on, you know, anything political outside of any, you know, involving black people or entertainment, you know, mainstream media won't get black people to comment on it. So it's sort of like, you know, we've got a million qualified, you know, black people or people of color to comment on anything, you know, political, but, you know, I've not seen a guy like, say, Gerald Horn on CNN or MSNBC, who is very well qualified to, you know, comment on anything of politics or history. But, you know, that's what they do. Unless it's, you know, like I said, unless it's dealing with entertainment or unless it's dealing with, you know, a black political spokesperson, you know, you're not going to get that.
Well, I like the fact that, in illustrating that, I'm tacking on to your observation about food stamps. The other indirect reference that he made, in fact, no, this was direct because he delineated who he was talking about criminal justice reform.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned black people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he was very clear about, you know, what he has done, the good things he has done in criminal justice reform, and these things pertaining specifically to African Americans. He neglected to point out, as did the people doing fact checking, the vast majority of people on public assistance are children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're children. So when he says this in the middle of a report in which he is talking about the achievements, and not the achievements just in this year, he's talking about achievements. He didn't delineate that this was for the year 2019 or the year 2018. He's talking as if from the word go, this is what I have done, and look at the good things I have done for black people, having to do with criminal justice reform and having to do with welfare. Now, he didn't talk in any meaningful way about how the nation as a whole, how have people benefited? What exactly did you do in the way of criminal justice reform, except that you wanted the audience to appreciate that you did this for black people.
Did you expect anything different? I mean, well,
we didn't expect anything different.
I wanted to ask you this, and like I said, my apologies for not watching the whole thing. I couldn't stomach it at all, but Did he say anything about Venezuela?
Of course.
Oh.
You mentioned Venezuela, and he said that, of course, he is extremely anti-Maduro and pro-Guy. I always fudge on his name, Guaido, the self-appointed interim president of Venezuela. But he also hinted that, you know, we shouldn't be surprised, although, of course, we don't want to do this as a nation, but we do value freedom and liberty for all, which is another way of saying he's not yet out of the woods in terms of deciding military intervention in Venezuela. Yes, he talked about Venezuela.
Well, I didn't miss anything.
I tell you, I was not a happy camper. I didn't go to sleep all happy last night, because this is happening supposedly to with a literate population, people who have common sense, a media that supposedly has all this information to keep, you know, these lies in check and deceit in check. And everything was wrong. We should be very clear when we as a population are expecting an address from the President of the United States on the State of the Union. That's what we ought to have. Every country knows it, how to do this. Every country knows how to deliver a State of the Union address. He puts elements, and this has been going on for some time, you know, the Hollywood aspect of things, and show and tell, and all these side things that have nothing to do with the serious business. Tell me what's going on with the State of the Union. That's what I want to know. But you have these people over here, and then they dragged a little girl with cancer into the whole thing, and they're supposed to stand up and take applause. What is this? And we know what it is.
You, Chase, I would argue with you about our population being literate. I disagree.
I think they're literate, because what happens is that they're not typically involved. They're not asked to be involved. They're not drawn into this very important aspect of civic duty. They have no idea. They just think, well, television is carrying it, so it must be important, but I don't want to watch it. I have something else that is of interest to me. But Americans are not not encouraged to participate in any aspect of civic life. And this is one of them. You should want to know what is going on in your country, according to the president. You should want to know whether you agree or disagree. Thanks a lot, Henry, for your call today. 888-874-4888. I want to turn or begin to encourage you to address the question of the Democrats' response via the candidate who they've made to Stacey Abrams, who they made into the person delivering the Democratic response, and what she had to say. Look, I don't want to taint anybody's opinion, but I'm watching this stuff, this whole production that didn't tell me much that I didn't know. We talked about it. And this is the beauty of preparing yourself to listen to a speech. You know, most everybody listening to this program as of yesterday when we talked about the environment of the speech and what we expect, how far off were we? We weren't far off at all. We anticipated most everything covered by the State of the Union address. Why? Because it is, in fact, politics. And if you understand the mind, the reasoning, pardon that word, the reasoning of the leader of this country, there's nothing surprising here. There's no surprise. No other country would tolerate this level of mediocrity. A person gets on television, commandeers the airwaves, all of the major media carrying it, minus input from people of color. They have nothing to say, apparently. News reporters who are black and brown and Asian and so forth have nothing to say, apparently. They're not in the discussion. We don't hear from them. And we're getting a report, supposedly, that we ourselves are hearing. Now, let's say the president says the sky is blue. Okay. What insight are you offering as a reporter, as an analyst, when you tell me the president said the sky is blue? Where is the analysis there? There's no analysis. You're repeating the same garbage that everybody already heard. There's no reporting. And then we move on to Stacey Abrams. If you stuck it through after 90 minutes of Trump and you took another 30 minutes to listen to Stacey Abrams deliver what was told to us to be the Democratic response to the president's address, what did you get? I'm saying, I'm sure there's something wrong with me. I'm sure the whole country couldn't possibly be putting up with this nonsense. I'm sure I can't possibly be the only one who finds this an utter and complete waste of time. And, in fact, an insult to the American people. And both sides are playing the same game. Here is a woman who herself just lost an election due to, and it was widely documented, due to serious questions about the validity of the election process itself. She held out for recounts, but was not saved by them. So she ran, she lost, and people kept saying, hey, look, you lost, get over it. Now, you would think somebody with that kind of fire, or at least supposed fire in the belly, given the chance to deliver a response to that just vapid speech by the president, would have something important to say. But what does she say? She says exactly what they gave her to say. She performed well. She did her job. She agreed to serve as a symbol of the ongoing struggle of blacks for voting democracy and little else. She didn't condemn the situation. She didn't come out fighting for anything. Instead, what was her message? Her message was that what we need now is a spirit of community and the promise of opportunity for all. Hogwash. That's not what we need. What we need is a good fight. What we need is people of conscience deciding that this country is going to hell in a handbasket, and we should not be in that basket. That's what we need. You come out there, given what you've just been through, and given what the country as a whole has been through, and especially people of color in this country, and you start preaching the concept of spirit of community. We need a spirit of community. You're going to be a healer. No, you don't heal yet. First, you need some people receiving knuckle sandwiches for what has happened in this country and what has brought this country to this place. Elections are rigged. Politicians are lying. We have massive corruption that are depriving people all over this country, all kinds of people, of their rights, of their ability to make a living. You should be mad as hell. I don't need you to preach to me about the spirit of community and the promise of opportunity for all. What kind of nonsense is that? You must think we're fools. That we don't know anything. Marcus from Wisconsin, your thoughts.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Ms. Lee, and thank you for your erudition as always. And by the way, just quickly as an aside, you have the best intro and bumper music of anybody in radio, period.
Thank you. I love
you. Know, I occasionally hear people surprised at the cluelessness and obtuseness of somebody like the President of the United States to how can they not see my suffering? I don't think people understand what the rich are like at the level of people like Trump. This guy's never been in a store, probably. He only has a vague idea of what goes on in your daily life. These people live like 16th century French barons. They have no idea what your life is like. They can't imagine. And any talk about democracy is, and I'll illustrate my point, is just absurd. These people at that level have, people that rich have the profoundest contempt for anything like an idea of democracy. The woman who provided the so-called response in the dog and pony show last night. The most
Stacey
remarkable,
Abrams.
Pardon me?
Stacey Abrams.
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. To me, the thing that stuck out, I read the transcript. I'd never subject myself to these idiot bloviators. She said, here in America, we sometimes stumble. We make stumbles. We make little mistakes, but we always make amends. See, this is the kind of crap you have to tell Americans. Okay, did they make amends for the, I don't know, 4 million dead Indochinese in Vietnam? How about Haiti over 200 years? Make those. How about 40 acres and a mule? How about ever? Did they ever do anything like that? Korea, Africa, Somalia, any place? The answer is, of course, no. Now, here's the question you have to ask yourself. Is for a woman to get on national television in front of an audience and say something like that, and you realize its context. You know, we've invaded over 250 countries. We're about to do it again, right in front of people's faces. And for her to say this means one of two things. She's ignorant of the facts and would have to be profoundly ignorant to say a thing like that, or she's deliberately, cynically misrepresenting it. So she's either a liar or a fool, but there's no third interpretation.
She's given this to read. She's given this to say. And it takes the heat off of the Democrats, quote-unquote, and specifically Nancy Pelosi, so that Nancy Pelosi doesn't, by not saying anything, is not seen as confrontational, which is what we need. We need confrontation. This is not a presidency that means to treat Americans in a humane fashion. This is a presidency serving the interests of people we don't even know or see. So they put her there, mm-hmm. and she gladly accepts, because this is her way of saying, look, I will need help, because hopefully she'll try and run again. And her bit is to put a black face, a civil rights black face, mm-hmm. on what was a major travesty and crime in which she and all of the people of Georgia were victims, and it had to do with voting. So she accepted that responsibility, and so she decides to remove from her presentation any suggestion that she wants a fight, any suggestion mm-hmm. that the president ought to be held accountable and, in fact, put to the attack, because this is what he's deliberately doing. So yeah, she gets by with it. And a moment was lost. Nobody said anything there that said, look, we have our gloves on. We can either fight with them on or we could fight with them off. But we are definitely in for a fight. We have given this president way too much latitude, way too much time. And look at the disastrous results. I mean, they didn't even discuss the furlough of 800,000 people as a major reason to engage in some kind of pugilistic exercise with this president. She's talking mm-hmm. about the spirit of community and the promise of opportunity for all. What world are you possibly living in?
Well, absolutely.
I don't get that.
Part of this is Americans' deep-seated mystical belief in the efficacy of elections. That's why people will sit in front of this stuff. You know, Alex de Tocqueville, the French noble who came to write and view the American experiment in the, I don't know, late 1840s. He wrote about this. He said, Americans are like children when it comes to election. And he said, it's because they are ignorant of what he called the science of electioneering. Rigging elections has been well understood since Caesar's time. And yet Americans approach it like...
Here's what we're also talking about, because things have evolved. We're mm-hmm. also talking about specifically elections and people of color and the long history of depriving people of mm-hmm. their rights, their voting rights, and even, as in the case, even of Stacey Abrams herself. Here's a person... And we can say that at the very least, this warranted an investigation, which never happened. But, you know, here's the person herself, whether she volunteered for the task or whether she felt compelled to do it herself, putting before people a really implausible argument. Thanks, Marcus, for your call today. We have to move on. Donald from East Point, you're on the air.
Yeah, Hotep, Idris.
Thank you. Hotep to you.
I didn't view the speech. I couldn't stomach it. I was listening to Bob Law. I was listening to Bob Law on WBAI, but he had the head of the National Organization of Black Women. Her name is Faye something. I can't remember the last name. And then when I woke up this morning, I found out that Stacey Abrams gave the speech, and everybody was talking about how good of a speech it was. And I said, okay, this is the flip side of Donald Trump. I saw Stacey Abrams' speech as one appeasing five categories. The first category, she was a woman. The second one was that she was black. The third one, that she was progressive. And she was also, there was also appealing to the immigrants. That's basically what I saw her for. She was just a showpiece. You know, she was controlled. I saw the hands of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer grooming her. So that's all I saw the response to Trump was. It was just as bad. They weren't talking about nothing really, but they're trying to talk to their base and get votes and try to get Trump out of there.
Well, if from this State of the Union address, if people don't get the message of how serious the situation is with us as a nation, I don't know what will convince them.
Pain?
Pain apparently isn't working. When you have as many people furloughed deliberately and for no reason, arbitrarily, by a president with serious mental issues.
Yeah. But
there are many countries with a smaller population than the population this president put at serious risk, and their families. And we're still conducting business as usual. We really have a problem.
Utrice, in France, they're raising hell.
Yes, they are.
I think it's pretty. Have you heard about it on this news here in the United States?
Well, yes, we've heard about it. We've talked about it on this program, too.
Yeah, but the national media don't play
not,
off.
I get your point. It is not a recurring news theme.
That's what I'm saying. They're playing it down, and in some cases, they're trying to play those folks as folks that's doing the protesting as being on the wrong side. So, you know, and plus Americans, I agree with the caller from Chicago. They're not that swift when it comes to protesting. You have to literally be in their face. I mean, personally, be in their face. They have, each and every one of them has to feel pain. They have to feel pain. And I hate to say it, Americans are greedy. They're greedy people. Unless it affects them, they don't care.
But, you know, I would differ with that view, that Americans are greedy. Okay. Americans are what they have been, in large measure, made to be, orchestrated into. Is that like this is a... some kind of a genetic trait. This is what they groomed to think and be.
I'm not saying you're wrong. However they got there, they're there.
But here's the thing. What are we doing?
Hey.
We are getting silly analysis, post-analysis, and they're repeating the same things, these brilliant minds in media. We have people who should be outraged about what happened last night. That was a mugging. That was a mugging. It only happened in a well-lit alley. But it was a mugging.
I'm outraged. I've been outraged at MSNBC, CNN, all this. I've been writing letters to them, protesting everything else. I've been outraged for years by them. But each time I talk to someone, they that's the way it's always been. It's going to always be like that. What can you do? That's the response I get.
Well, the reason I think we get these responses is that we also indicate to them a major weakness with us, and that is we are not organized. We are conducting, if we do conduct these kinds of efforts, we are flying solo. We do not have, which is the difference with what is happening in France. They are organized. We have no organization. And this is particularly sad because the people who are damaged the most are people who should be organizing in their own interests. We see how they used, the Democrats use them, the Republicans, the progressives, everybody just uses people to get to where they want to get. But we have nobody. You listen to all that was said last night, 90 minutes of Trump, 30 minutes of Stacey Abrams, and we cannot distinguish anything specifically related to our advantage. Nothing.
I agree.
Well, there you go. So if we continue to behave the way we behave, we continue to be treated the way we are treated.
I agree. I mean,
okay, then.
You don't get them wrong. Disagreement on me. I just tell you.
I agree with you.
However these folks got to the situation they're in, we're in it. The problem is, like you said, how do we get out? How do we get out? And I say the only way we'll get out is just, it's going to get so bad that it's going to frighten the hell out of everybody. One elder was saying, I was about 12 years old, she said, honey, we are crisis-oriented people. Maybe she's right.
Well, and yes and no. I don't want us to fall for the conditioning of that kind of thinking either.
I don't either.
Because what it does is it brings back on us the responsibility for other people's behavior. No. We should be clear about who's causing our trouble and move on that as an integral part of our action. When we start, and this is a tried and true method, especially when you're dealing with oppressed people, you take it for granted. They don't have the will even to oppose you. You could run over them because psychologically they're already disabled. They're disconnected from their own problems. So I understand what you're saying. And there's no way to deny that much of it is absolutely true. But we have to understand also, these are tools of warfare. How do you keep people down? You psychologically disable them. They can't see it. Even as they experience it, they can't see it. So this is a natural fallout from our shared condition. We have to find a way to change that. You know, it's like saying your baby has a cold because your baby isn't a strong baby. You have to change that way of thinking. All right, that brings us to the end of our program. We'll catch up with each other again. Thanks for listening and contributing. Bye-bye.